This week on the Lords of Grantham podcast, we dive into episode 3 of the final season of The Crown. The world is really honing in on Princess Diana and Dodi Al-Fayed, and things aren't looking so great. The pressure is on. Let's see how they handle it. And we are back with potentially the saddest episode in the history of this podcast. Corey, how are you doing outside of these wee?
I'm doing all right. We just went through WrestleMania weekend, and we can talk more about that at the end of the podcast. How are you feeling after all that, Dave? I know it was an eventful night on Sunday.
It was good. It was very good. I mean, I feel it was like you watched like the highest of highs and then get home from work, try your best to see any clips.
Oh, yeah.
Went for a jog. A little bit. Came home, took a shower, made a cup of coffee, and sat down in front of the TV and watched this.
And now we're ready to go. We're rearing and ready to go.
Yeah, any news on the fronts of our programs?
I was reading a little bit about Bridgerton. So the actress who plays Whistledown, Nicola Coughlan, of Dairy Girls fame also, it came out that she has, in her contract that they create a cut of the show that has less nudity so she can show the show to her mother.
Just like a special cut?
Yeah, it's a PG version. To which I say, if you're not watching Bridgerton to see some bare butts, I don't know what you're doing here. That's like a quarter of the appeal, I'd say, of that show.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, Netflix is also introducing a feature where people can skip the foreplay. So when they,
what?
Yeah, when they put on an episode, they can have those scenes excised out of any program they're watching,
and just get right to boning or skip at all?
Well, that's the thing. It's an oddly named feature because if you want to skip the foreplay, that means you probably are just skipping to the action. But kids these days don't even know what foreplay is. So, you know, to them, that's sex. So they think they're skipping it over.
All right, Netflix.
Anyways. Yeah. Meanwhile, with Downton Abbey, Lily James had her 35th birthday extravaganza. She partied at one of London's most exclusive clubs in a £10,000 cost outfit before going to Milan. It was a 36-hour journey for her. Yeah, she was out partying till late in the morning with her friend Gemma Chan, and then was seen the next day, in Milan. So she's 35, and she's single again. Apparently, she was dating the bassist from Queens of the Stone Age, and now she's single. I gotta hit her up.
Wow.
See how she's doing.
Well, that's what my old college roommate is, the sound guy for Queens of the Stone Age. So little did I know what a connect. Well, I mean, Lily James is also 1 degree of Kevin Bacon away from us because she sent us a cameo.
Yeah, just gotta follow up with her. Obviously,
give her a call.
That's all that's going on in those worlds of the shows that we watch, though. I think we should get to this episode. It's a heavy one indeed.
It's a heavy one, but I think we discussed, at length before even really diving into the season, how they would handle this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they did as good a job as you could. It wasn't, like, morbid, you know?
No. There is something strange, though, that gnaws at me. Is like, you know, there's always the curiosity factor about Diana and people wanting to know more about her. And it is kind of ironic for how much she was exploited that they left the remains of her story for season 6 to get people to tune into the new season. Because I feel like they could have tied up the story last year. But they're like, you know what, the first 3 episodes of this season, and maybe it's because they directly inform what's coming next, but there is something, the way I read it, that it's like there was a canniness to the choice to have 3 episodes with her in the beginning of the season to kind of exploit the public interest on that front.
Mm-hmm. Especially because I don't, you know, this could be an incorrect assumption, but I don't foresee Camilla and her, you know, like all this stuff discussed in the first episode being a recurring theme.
No, it's suddenly over, I think, with the exit of Diana.
Yeah, so it's not even like, maybe, obviously you want to set up the fact that the boys love her and want her to be around and miss her and mm-hmm. aren't so sure about Dodie. And then this happens, but it is a decision to stretch this out for 3 hours, basically.
Well, I guess last week was a half hour, so we'll give them some grace and say, you know,
2.5.
2-ish. Yeah. But yeah, we start with them still on the yacht. You got to think about this too. In terms of filming, it's a lot of time spent filming on a yacht somewhere. Must be nice.
Must be nice, yeah.
Hey, Elizabeth Debicki, come on down. We'll pay you handsomely, and you get to film all your scenes on a yacht.
And you get to do a quarter of the season and get all the praise.
Yeah, you're the only one who walks away with any awards or hardware from the show for the season. But we start with her lamenting that Dodie's written her a weak poem, but she finds it kind of cute, charming, you know. And so, you know, they're doing okay from where we last saw them. Meanwhile, Dodie still has in his ear, his father, Muhammad, telling him, "You'll become a colossus if you marry her. You become my equal. I'll make you a partner in everything. You just gotta lock her down, brother."
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been on this yacht for weeks. Dave, what is Dodie's plan to try and win her over in the last stretches of their vacation?
To win her, he wants to. You talking about what? My question about that is: do you think he was even trying to win her over on a timeline, or do you think Dad saying that you'll be my equal put everything into quick speed? Because if you're telling ice cream and mm-hmm. shopping is the way to win her over, then
Dave, it's gelato. I don't know. Let's be fair to the Italian community. It's gelato, not ice cream. Well, I think what the show is trying to do is square up that when they were found, he had a big ring in his pocket. So mm-hmm. from there, you kind of infer, okay, was he trying to get things accelerated? I was reading an article before we started recording about someone who was writing Muhammad's autobiography that ultimately didn't get published. But what he said was that there was definitely vested interest from Muhammad this entire time to bring Diana closer into the family. And part of that mm-hmm. was just telling Dodie to try and maneuver and get closer. So I think it's fair to say that there may have been some kind of manipulation at play to try and accelerate this relationship.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is one of those episodes where you kind of want to get we usually discuss it at the end, but how much of this is true?
Right.
Because this is, of all the episodes we've watched, this one has to be the most fantastical because no one knows what these conversations were. These people died. Like,
right. And you're just trying to put an appropriate bow on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can just tackle the other side plot of this episode, which is that William looks long in the face. And so Princess Anne
misses his mommy.
Yep. No, it's not the princess's mommy. I'm the Princess Anne. All right.
He misses his mommy.
Right. Well, yeah. He misses Diana. So she recommends to Charles, like, hey, remember when you killed the stag at, like, age 14? He's age 15. You should take him out to go kill. Home. Yeah. And so we see that. We see William get his first kill.
Yeah.
Kills a stag.
And then they bloody him or whatever the ritual is.
Yeah, they put the blood on his face. Phil doesn't even get out of the car, though. He's just sitting in the car the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Why would he?
He's just, I mean,
he's too old.
Come on, Phil. He's in his 70s at this point.
To think at this point, yeah. To think he'd live another 30 years.
Right. He's got a long way to go. But the thing that called to mind for me from this scene, because they keep paralleling it too with where Diana's at, was, you know, as a reminder, the writer of the show also wrote the, what is it? The movie with the Queen. And so that movie had a lot of symbolism with stags. Peter Morgan, the writer. Yeah, there's all the symbolism of, like, how Diana is like was like an innocent stag getting preyed upon by people. And he just pretty much reuses the same metaphor here for mm-hmm. a brief moment. And we may see more of that in the coming weeks, depending on how much he lifts from that movie. But again, heavily fictionalizing or just leaning into like the creative side of things to say like, oh yeah, you know, she was just so innocent. Hard to say if, you know, that this is exactly what was happening at the same time as those events, but you're definitely seeing a firmer hand in terms of the storytelling here to try and wrap up her story in a poetic and dramatic way.
Yeah, yeah.
But they are in Italy, as you're saying. They're getting gelato. And in this moment, you kind of get a glimpse of, I think in this episode, you get a clear glimpse of Dodie being a stranger, or weirdo, kind of, or just kind of being aloof, where he says he wants to apologize for everything that happened with the breakoff with his fiance. He didn't expect this to happen, to which Diana says, well, you broke up with someone who is in love with you. That just is what comes with
that.
Yeah,
she's like, I know what it's like.
Been through it. And, you know, she's like, I didn't know about the lawsuit. And now we understand why there was a lawsuit, because he told her to give up working. Apparently, Dodie wasn't the best with finances. Just reading this that one article, apparently when he was trying to be a quote-unquote film producer, you know, he was just an executive on Chariots of Fire. He didn't do much work. The only time he showed up, apparently, was when they're filming that beach scene, as we saw on The Crown last season. He was handing out cocaine to the actors. So he wasn't the serious film producer.
Yeah, I mean, clearly you can see Mohammed doesn't think the most highly of him.
Right, and so it doesn't seem like he thought much about money, which would explain the situation of, oh yeah, give up your work, we'll take care of you, and now he gets sued, and there you have it.
They do, considering if that's really what he did, they could play him more like a loose cannon, but they play him as sort of like a nerd with a little bit of game.
That's the thing, is I think they're trying to be sensitive to the fact that they did have a relationship, how much you play it like there wasn't that real of a relationship versus there may have been something there. But I think that's the correct read, because based on what I was reading about Dodie, it seems like he's kind of an aloof person. He's not intellectually curious, but he did seem like a emotionally in touch a little bit more, where he could talk to people and be kind of receptive to them. But
yeah, so he's like a charismatic Nepo baby. Doesn't need to be smart.
Yeah, exactly. And if you saw the real guy, the Crown is definitely a glammed up version of this Dodie. Rest in peace. Because he just looks like a guy. If Diana had to choose, she should have gone for that surgeon. That guy had more going on. Dave, are you comparing the two men now?
I'm looking it up. He doesn't look... I think it's a good casting job.
Sure. Would you go for Hasnik Khan or Dodie?
Dodie. Dodie's got money.
Okay. Hasnik Khan had a fierce mustache, though. Anyways. Diana is talking... They are talking, though, briefly about like how there's the racism in the papers, saying like, why can't Diana go for a nice English boy? Why does she have to go for this guy?
Mm-hmm. What's their type?
And... Yeah.
People are allowed to have types.
She does. absolutely. And so, but all of this is kind of speaking to how much scrutiny there was around him at this time. And you see that here in Italy, where all the tourists have cameras on them and they can't escape their attention. They have to run away from all these tourists and photographers.
I think it starts innocent enough, and you see Diana in multiple moments. You'll see like a teenager or a kid, and she'll kind of smile at them and be like, oh, this is great. You know, like you see this little moment of like, this is cute. And then it just immediately devolves into like being chased around like it's the Beatles in Hard Day's Night.
Quite literally. And so they have to hide out. They go to a jewelry store. And while they're in the jewelry store hiding out, it's like, well, we can just shop while we're here. And that's where they are looking at rings just to kill time. And the ring comes from the line of Di Moi Oui. And yeah, she wants the ring.
Does she want the ring? I don't think she wants the ring. I think she's making small talk and he's aloof.
Yeah. And also maybe thinking like, oh man, we're in this shop maybe we should buy something for their trouble.
But then he doesn't wind up buying it there.
No, he doesn't. But he does hop on the phone shortly after that, after the escape, and Muhammad wants updates. He wants to know what's going on. And the way they film Muhammad in this episode, they really do position him like a villain, where he's in a darkened room in the big seat, leaned back, barking commands at his son.
And you see that Dodie, and there's multiple instances in this episode where, you know, the theme of the episode is, well, Dodie's theme is like, get over your dad, you need to be your own man. But every time you see, it's like, no, we're doing this, we're going here instead, or you need to propose to her and then you'll be my equal. And you just see Dodie's like, oh boy. Like, he really, it's a tough thumb to be under, the Muhammad Al-Fayed thumb.
But Dodie also just seems like he's quick to just kind of acquiesce to his father. Like, he has no backbone at all.
Yeah.
Which is just never going to make for a productive relationship here if you're at the beck and call of someone else. And he does tell his son, though, oh, that line, oui, moi, or whatever, dis moi, oui, that's an engagement ring, son. You're a step closer. You're almost there.
You can see how that charisma of Muhammad Al-Fayed becomes like poisonous.
Yeah.
Where he's, you know, poor Dodie's just like, I just want to have fun with her. And there's no real, like, he's not making advances towards marrying her. And Muhammad's like, you got to do this, and then you're my equal. And all of a sudden he's like, oh, great. No, I guess I got to do this now.
Muhammad's like the life of the party, where like, oh, man, this guy's fun and stuff. And then you get in the room with him alone, and it's just like, okay, there's something off with this person. they really can't turn off their on switch.
Yeah, you stay over their house, and you wake up the next morning, and like, it's like, I'm not here for mimosas or screwdrivers. I want to go home. I want pancakes and a cup of coffee and to leave. And he's like, no. I am. You're here for me.
I'm the party. It's like, no, the party's over, brother. They got to leave the boats. She wants to go get a call with her children. And so they're stopping in Paris because Dodie has to do one thing while he's there. And that one thing turns out to be visiting a chalet of Muhammad's.
Well, Dodie wants to seal the deal, so he wants to get the ring. He knows the ring is in Paris. And Diana's like, can we just leave? And can I just go be with my family? And he's like, no, you can. Well, it's a private jet situation. Dodie's sort of first world problems. Even call him first world when you're that rich. That's beyond first world. That's like Paris. Elite world. He's like, no, don't go on a regular plane. Come with me. I'll take the private jet, but you have to do one night in Paris. And she's like, all right, fine. But you can already see the tension there. Like, she told, this is before she's talking to the kids and they're like, are you going to marry Dodie?
And, right. She was like, no, don't believe what you read. But yeah, like you said, there's the tension there where she's telling him what she needs, and she has the power. She's Princess Diana, and he's saying, well, no, I got to do this one thing. I got to do this, and she's understanding. But yeah, they go to Paris to get that ring, but they stop at the chalet, and part of that is to impress her. Like, look what Muhammad owns, what she already knows.
Well, yeah, this is, I think, one of those moments where, like, you can't stand Muhammad, where, like, the heel turn is complete. Where they're like, let's go to the apartment. She's got to talk to her kids in 45 minutes. And they're like, no, we're going here. And he's like,
yeah.
Dodie's like, all right, fine. Where you see him become a pushover and a victim. And Diana's like, I want to talk to my kids.
Yeah. Muhammad's pushing his son to say, I want to talk to Diana. Put her on the phone. And he's saying, you don't understand, Daddy. She don't want to talk. And she doesn't want to talk to him. This is the first time, too, we clearly see that Diana's had it up to here a little bit with Muhammad's like influence. I think part of it, too, is just like, the way the show reads it is like she does seem to have an interest in Dodie, and so the presence of Muhammad is definitely poisoning this relationship here. It's like, give some space. And of course, Muhammad has nothing to tell her other than like, oh, how do you like this house? The Prime Minister of Paris gave it to me or something like that. Fantastic.
That's the one that he bought for, that was the Duke and Duchess, the former king, right? That's where they stayed.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, she's stressed. So the paparazzi, they really do a good job of showing how relentless the paparazzi were with them. They're just tracking them the entire time from place to place. And this was the thing in the 90s. I mean, this was really like the outbreak of like, it sells. And we saw that last week where people were paying for photos of them, and it really continued back into the aughts, into the double O's, until this past decade where I think celebrities got a little bit more control over the situation, where they could tell paparazzi, this is where I'm going to be, here and here. You can get your pictures. Otherwise, leave us alone, you know, and they became a little bit more balanced. But all bets were off back then. And so, yeah, it's stressful. They get to the Ritz because that's where they're going to hide out, because she needs to call her boys.
Yep, but she misses the boys. The boys are, they're busy. Because she missed her window and she is not thrilled.
Yeah, they're busy getting William's busy getting blood smeared on his face. So how does she kill time, Dave?
At the Ritz?
Yeah.
Is this the proposal?
Yeah.
You fill me in on this one.
She's wrapping a PlayStation.
Oh, that's okay. I saw the wrap. I like looked down to have a sip of coffee. I looked up and there was a box being wrapped. It's a birthday present for Harry, right? Harry.
Yeah.
You think that boy doesn't have a PlayStation already?
Well, that's the question. So apparently it's based on a true story where that a couple weeks, his birthday is September 13th. And so she had already gotten a gift for him for his birthday. I think it may have been a hand-me-down from someone else, but as Harry recited it, it was an Xbox, and he was elated because he loved video games. But as anyone knows, the Xbox came out in 2001, so it obviously was not that. Sorry, Harry. Harry also does not recall this happening. Everyone else does, because he apparently blacked out that whole kind of time of his life. So we don't know which system he got. He did get a video game console.
Could be a Dreamcast.
No, not 1997. It wasn't available yet. It was either a Nintendo 64 or a PlayStation.
Or Sega CD?
Maybe. Or a Jaguar. I don't know. Or a 3DO. I do like the thought that he got a PlayStation, because I got a PlayStation also in September 1997. So to think that the Royals got that in the household at the same time as my family is like, whoa, behind the times a little bit.
Wow, how similar we are.
Yeah, but I would like to think it would be a Nintendo 64, because that came out in 1996, so that lines up a little bit better in terms of timeline. But if you say Xbox, that makes me think it's disc-driven, which makes me think it's PlayStation. We have spent way too much time
All of our fans are like, well, why are they talking about video game release dates?
I just know way too much about video games, but happy that Harry got that last gift, though, from Diana. That's pretty sweet. But yeah, they go out hunting, they get back, and she gets to go on the phone with them.
And this is the conversation where they ask, are you going to marry Doty?
Right. And they really milk this scene, because we know it is the last moments that she is having with her children. And just pretty much reiterating how much she loves them and just asking about everything and how she disapproves of the hunting, or she wasn't thrilled to hear that William had killed a stag.
And yeah, she's like, did you do the bloodying or whatever the phrase is? And she's like, oh God, like she's still all too familiar with the rituals, because this is also there in Scotland at Balmoral Estate, where, you know, Diana kind of caused issues last time.
And I kind of go back and forth on the scene, because in some respects I understand, you know, we're really showing those last moments and really driving home how much of a loss this is. But it felt in some ways perverse to me that we're kind of peeping into something we shouldn't have a purview into here. Like, especially if people who are very much still alive and, you know, as we know from Harry over the past couple of years, still reeling from the trauma of losing your mom at such a young age.
And
just
felt this something method, a little bit, too.
Yeah, it just felt a little bit, I don't know, too voyeuristic for my taste a little bit. Even if
this whole episode, I mean, this whole through line of this episode is so... So, and we already talked about it a little bit. It's all speculation. Like, it's voyeuristic, but it's also not, it's likely mostly false, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of conjecture going on in this episode. And yeah, so after that call, they're going to go to a restaurant to eat dinner, which Doty, come on, man.
Chez Benoit, and he talked to the people and he said, I want the most roses you could possibly have on this table. Mm-hmm. But then we see the paparazzi's out and ready to go, so he calls the audible to go to the Ritz instead.
Yeah. Just go back to where they came from.
Well, no, they're at Doty's flat, and they're going to the Ritz.
Oh, is that Doty's flat?
Yeah.
I thought they were at the Ritz, and then they...
Okay. No, they go to the Muhammad's villa, then to Doty's apartment.
But then they go to the Ritz.
And then
I'm pretty sure they go...
That's where your Eclipse brain kicks in, because they definitely go to... She's like, I just want to go to my apartment. That's what they're saying, Doty's apartment. Mm-hmm. And then... So they're like, let's go to the Ritz instead. And they get to the Ritz, and it's already swarmed with paparazzi. Like, that's how these people are leeches.
Mm-hmm.
And this, so he's got to go and improvise.
Yeah, because they have a plan to get out of there.
Well, his whole little restaurant filled with roses plan is out the window.
No, I just looked it up, Dave. They'd absolutely go to the Ritz Hotel.
In the beginning?
You got the... Yeah. After going to the villa, no, that's absolutely where they go.
Then why?
Because they're going to end their night at the flat.
But she said all her stuff is at the flat, including the wrapped gift.
Oh, maybe she stopped. I don't know.
It's all inconsequential. They go from random place to random place. Point I'm making: the paparazzi are sharks that they're already staking out.
I think someone picks up the gift for Diana to wrap. That's what it is. So that she's at the Ritz the entire time and doesn't leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they're talking about Doty's apartment a lot in the beginning, so that's why I made that mistake.
But they never go there. I feel like if we saw Doty's apartment, we would know, because it would probably look like something opulent and barely lived in at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the paparazzi traces them back to where they came from, essentially.
So then they go to the restaurant, and this is where Diana really loses it. She sees a little girl smiling at her, and she has that moment of like, oh, this is cute. And then the murmurs start, and she just can't take it anymore. They got to go upstairs.
Oh, yeah. It's too much. Absolutely too much. And so they go upstairs. They eat upstairs because she's starving. And Doty takes it upon himself to put on some Julio Iglesias, her favorite singer. Did not know.
Is that confirmed?
I did not look it up. It's a shame, though, that she did not live long enough to see the success of Enrique Iglesias. So, I cannot confirm or deny, Dave, if she was a fan or not. Oh, Julio Iglesias was most likely not Princess Diana's favorite. She was a fan of Duran Duran.
I'm scrolling down the same Google page.
Duran Duran is a far cry from Julio Iglesias. Well, either way, that would track with Doty maybe just not knowing her all that well, honestly.
Yeah, and her reaction to that, it's like, it's Julio Iglesias, is your favorite. And she's like, okay.
I want to hear Chumbawamba. Thank you. Can you put that on?
Can you put Smash Mouth back on, please?
Yeah. And this is one of the worst proposals I've ever seen. And I think it's intentionally shown to be like, this guy has not got it to convince her.
Yeah, because you can tell, like, what's the word the kids are using? He's got the riz sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
He's got like controlled riz. But once
he
you put him
sunglasses.
Once you put him in a situation where he is like he's shown all his cards, he's being vulnerable, he becomes devoid of the riz, and he's just a nerdy Nepo baby. And this is abundantly clear. As Diana's, you know, he proposed, here's this ring, you said you wanted it. And she's just like, no, absolutely, stop. She tells stop, stand up.
Yeah.
And she starts talking to him like, this is it. You're like, no, you're not even fully done with the last engagement to start another one.
Yeah, and all that she went through after Prince Charles with that marriage, she's not ready for another marriage so quickly. Like, this just doesn't make any sense on any level. But yeah, no, this is when they eat, because she is starving. Because they don't even get a chance to eat. They have this conversation and everything before. Because the food comes in to interrupt their conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, man.
Now, did you think it was going to be like balloons and streamers and some grand like that he got. Gift of love or something.
Yeah, he totally misread the situation. But no, they didn't do that. It was just straight up food.
Yeah, good for them. Good for Dodi, I suppose.
I'm glad they got one more meal in.
And then this phone call. Well, they start having this honest conversation. Now, this is where I was a little confused. Or not confused, but just unclear. That she tells the kid she's not going to marry Dodi. She says no to him. And she says, you know, like, thank you for the best summer of my life. I really needed this. You know, you really helped me through a dark time kind of thing. But she's also not like, I don't want to be with you anymore. But then they start having like the post-mortem conversations where it's like, you need to tell me something honest about me. And Diana's like, you're too reliant on your father. You know, you need to be your own man and you'll really go places in the world in the film industry, which apparently he was a buffoon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he says to her, you got to slow down because you have all these expectations, but you're already doing so much. You're such a huge influence. Just calm down and be the best person you can be without trying to rush through things.
Yeah. I mean, the conversation to me feels like a breakup.
It like, does.
Or because she's friend zoning him in a lot of ways, it seems. Uh-huh. It reads to me.
Well, that's the kind of speculation I can't get behind. Like, we don't know what this was.
Right. And I think what they're basing this off of is just that, well, A, he had the ring, but he didn't propose. But from what we've heard since then is her butler said that Princess Diana only saw this rebound, this as a rebound, as a, as a fling. So, like, she never really took it all that seriously. Even to the point that I was reading, too, that the photographer, like the Mario Brenna, who took the photos of her last week on the yacht, there's people who suspect Diana was the one who called on herself to get the photos taken.
Oh, I mean, that tracks, as especially, you know, in this day and age, we see a lot of royalty heads scrutinizing Meghan Markle for, you know, pushing away the paparazzi while simultaneously doing a Netflix documentary. Like, you know, the Elizabethans are not too fond of people taking their spotlight.
But I think what they're trying to do, or Peter Morgan's trying to do, is square up that maybe they weren't meant to be forever just based on the fact that they were together for a matter of weeks, and it doesn't seem like... Who knows? Who knows what has happened? But I agree, Dave, though. Like, it just feels a little bit weird that they're reading so much into this. And it really just comes back to around the giving her another opportunity to say, I just love my kids so much and I want to do right by them. I just really love my kids. That's the point to take home from all this.
But then they do the scene where he gets on the phone with Muhammad and Muhammad's like, tell me what's the news? And he's like, well, let me tell you the news. We have reached an agreement, and then discreetly hangs up and cuts this big promo. I'm my own man. You need to let me spread my wings. And you know, he just goes off in an impassioned, emotional speech about how his dad needs to cut him some slack. And he's like shaking. And then we find out later that like Diana's aware of the fact that this was fake. And it's like, this is the kind of thing like, come on, if this guy never got a backbone to his dad, who's to say he even truly wanted to buck up against his dad? He might have been totally fine getting in line all the time.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. And so they set off, and the driver's been drinking. This is something we know to be true. And trying to escape the paparazzi. We don't see what happens. They just go into the tunnel, and that's the last we see. We see the man with the dog watching them go off.
Mm-hmm, from the first episode.
And we do see them holding hands in the car as they're going off.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing about these two, that we don't know what would have happened, and maybe that's the nice way to send it off. Like, it's not a will they, won't they. It's like, they could have made something of it.
Sure. In some ways, it almost looked like a Thelma and Louise situation to me, where it's just like, okay, well, now they're friends. Now they're just going to ride off into the sunset off a cliff. Like, yeah, it was a weird way of, like, for some reason, just trying to put a resolution on this relationship that more than likely didn't have a resolution.
Trying to make this all culminating in some proposal when who's to say he might have just got the ring when they saw it in Paris. And that's the thing about this show is, like, I don't know if you found anything in further research, but, like, these are jewelers with receipts, you know? These are people that can be tracked down, or probably were tracked down historically by people. And we're just sort of drawing lines. It just seems, it's an icky episode in a lot of ways.
But in a lot of ways, it's also just, I think, falling in line with the overarching structure that they have for the show, of, like, showing that there's a huge loss for these kids, and that informs the Crown going forward, because you see how much she cared for her Harry and William, and they really emphasize that. It just leans a little too heavily into the Diana, because I know she's a big factor, but this is called The Crown, and she's not part of The Crown. And again, we're just speculating about her final days, and it just, I don't know. It is a weird one, but you definitely get a highlight acting reel for DeBicki. You can see why she won an award even just from three episodes of work, because she is going to work here, and you really do at times feel like you were watching Diana. She is so convincing.
Yeah, definitely. That's where, you know, like, if you do the Google, she doesn't look exactly like Diana, but she's got the essence down for sure.
Yeah, the way she carries herself. This is an effective episode. I think it definitely, there's definitely a high degree of difficulty with wrapping up a Diana. I think they did as right by her as they could, but in typical Crown fashion, where they have to embellish basically because Peter Morgan can't help himself.
Yeah, like it, in the moment, it's fine. And when I say the episode kind of gave me the ick, I don't mean to say that I don't think it was well handled. The moment in and of itself is probably the most difficult thing to handle, and they handled that appropriately. So. Yeah. This show has botched a lot of things historically as far as accuracy and fictionalizing things is concerned. So I really don't have a dog in the fight, especially considering how critical we have been of the real life royals. I really don't mind fictionalizing it. It's just kind of a strange thing to fictionalize and to speculate. This is one that needed that Netflix disclaimer that it's fictionalized.
Yeah. I don't know if it's strange, because there's been so much speculation anyways. Why not throw another log on the fire? But yeah, it is what it is. I'm curious, Dave, where were you when you found out the news about Diana? Do you remember?
I have no idea. I was talking about this with some people over the weekend. I had some family over, actually last week right after we recorded. And they were asking like what we were doing, and I was saying how weird it is that we're doing The Crown, because as we've discussed, we lived through this. We lived through Chumbawamba and Smash Mouth. But I don't have much memory. Like, I didn't know who Dodie was until last season started. And I did my little prep work. What about you?
But you knew who Diana was. You knew Diana.
I knew who Diana was, and I knew when she died, and I remember Elton John. And I remember the Beanie Baby.
Yeah. That's fine. I remember the Beanie Baby. That was a big deal. I don't remember Candle in the Wind all that much, strangely enough. Maybe it's just because every time that song came on, I was like, I'm not about this song. But I know it's beloved and people adore it. And it was a huge, huge hit. The biggest selling single of all time. But I remember vividly when it happened. It was a Friday night, August, right before fourth grade was starting for us. Family was sitting in a parking lot of 7-Eleven there in Devon. Was having a Slurpee or Box of Nerds or something, and we were listening to country radio when they announced the news on the radio.
Really? That's a real memory.
I just remember how shocked my parents were. That was the thing, because like I just don't recall anything that really kind of like shook them to the core of like, wait, what just happened? And then like having to go home and put on CNN just to like see like more about the news, because it was so just hard to believe. Kind of similar to the next summer, too, when JFK Jr. died, actually, too, because it was just like they're so young. Like, it shouldn't have been happening. But yeah, I just remember like that moment of like, oh, wow, this person's really important and affected a lot of people. And even for my parents who could care less about the royalty, like, that's just speaks to the moment, really.
Yeah. And I think Dodie does a good job, or Peter Morgan does a good job of laying in how important Diana was in such little time. As a independent woman.
Yeah.
So
that's the thing. She really comes out on top in terms of being herself till the end here. And It does remind me, Dave. Should we watch that movie Spencer with Kristen Stewart as Princess Di?
Should we? Well, we already watched Diana the Musical.
We did. We did watch Diana the Musical.
Well, maybe behind the paywall on Patreon we do that, and then we do The Queen. Because we saw The Queen in theaters. I remember that more than I remember seeing when Princess Diana died. But that we'll save that for behind the paywall. But that could be, you know, I would be unopposed to diving more into the Diana of it all.
It's the same director of a movie we recently watched, Dave, El Conde.
Oh, so sure.
We can unpack that one also. But yeah, that's the Diana of it all for this week. We got power rankings, though.
Yep, the most difficult upward power rankings I've ever had to do in any show we've watched.
Even going down, too, it felt difficult.
Why don't you start us off then, Corey?
At number three, I got that Stag. Like, he just got by William.
All right.
You know, minding his own business. And then he got his blood smeared on William. Like, come on. The Stag did not ask for this.
Symbolic.
There you go. It is symbolic. How about you, Dave?
Number three, I got the paparazzi. Because they are absolutely, you know, they're sharks in a water. In the water. And then the victims are there. And I remember, the one thing I remember following Diana was learning what paparazzi was and thinking they were evil and bad. And not to say that they were ever good, but I think last week the spin is put on how important the looking into the celebrity world is. When this week it's like, no, you guys stink. You're awful.
Yeah. Well, at number two, I agree with all that too. But the irony is paparazzi only got worse thereafter. You'd think they'd learn a lesson, but they didn't. I got Muhammad at number two. This guy is trash.
I got him at number two. Yep, absolutely.
Like,
heel turn of the century. I can't believe we liked
him. Really, truly.
We fell for his charm.
Yeah, and the more I read, it really was a concerted effort on his part the entire time to win over Diana and bring her into his good graces. It's like, man, what a slick piece of trash. I could say that. He's a billionaire. And he lived a long life. And it seems like he also really showed no guilt or remorse or felt he had any influence over what happened to them.
Even though he memorialized them as if they were a married couple. Like,
yeah. Yeah. He was really pushing the narrative that you know, they were going to lock it down.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty bad.
Number one going down, I got Dodie.
Okay.
Because this guy is the pushover of the century. Like, as Muhammad, let's just say he's under, as Muhammad's bad, he doesn't do anything to push back on his father. He indirectly leads to the situation where they are at the end of the episode. And he even tries to fool Diana for that brief moment of talking up to his dad. And he's like, you got me. I didn't do it. I'm a loser. Yeah, down for Dodie for me.
Well, I got Dodie tied with Diana because they...
Okay.
Diana's got the pressure on her. You know, I think if it wasn't for Muhammad, these two would have... And I think Muhammad gets the credit for introducing them. Well, I mean, in this... Retrospectively, shouldn't have done it. But...
Yeah.
They're both under such immense pressure to live up to expectations. And then it, you know, forces them to act recklessly. And then they die. You know, sadly.
Yeah. Well, Dave, let's get into it. Who's going up for you?
Number three, we very briefly touched upon it. I got Diana's friend Susie Auerbach.
Okay.
She talks to her on the phone in the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
And she's like, you're crazy. What are you doing? Get out of there. Go be with your family. Leave early. Go to London. She had the right idea.
Mm-hmm. She did. She did have the right idea. Just go home to safety. Well, at number three going up, I got Princess Anne. I thought this is a sign of her like showing her influence where she says to Phil, like, hey, you know, you've killed some stags. You should take William out there. And he kind of just he just looks up at the wall, sees a stag on the wall. That's a good idea, Princess Anne. And, you know, just from stories that you hear today, she seems to be the glue of the family since Queen Elizabeth has left us. So, like, Princess Anne, she got some flexing power.
He flexed. Yeah, I mean, she's discreet, but she's good.
Yeah.
Well, number two going up, I got that jeweler.
Okay.
Sold a giant ring, made a big payday. And if we're allowed to be morbid, which, you know, in this podcast we've made jokes before, didn't get it returned.
Yeah. That's a real shame. Yeah, he lost the hardware.
Well, they made the money.
Well, they did make the money. They did make the sale. Well, number two going up, I got Harry. This boy's getting a PlayStation. Oh, my Lord. You know, the reason why my family decided to get a PlayStation instead of Nintendo in 97 was it came with a demo disc. You didn't even have to pay for games to play out of the box. You got a demo disc, and you could just start playing on the thing. Harry's going to have a great time in between tiers coming up soon.
With the demo disc. With the jam.
Diana never had a chance to buy any games to go with it. Couldn't get any Crash Bandicoot or anything. Just has the demo disc to keep him company.
Something tells me he already has a PlayStation. He already has dozens and dozens of games already.
I mean, who knows? On that yacht, William was playing Street Fighter 2 on an SNES, so they may not have had, you know,
that's true,
the upgrade yet.
That's true.
No. Well, who's number one, Dave, going up?
Well, I got William, man. He becomes a man. He takes part in a family ritual. He kills a stag. And I think this would have been a moment, if you really wanted to do a parallel between him and Diana, if they had William looking like he did something wrong and it was joyless and he hates the ritual of it all, then I would be like, ugh. But instead he's like, yeah, put that blood on my face.
The only thing that got me about this is it just felt like he was going through the motions as much as he did it. You know, it still seems like he's still a lost boy, a little forlorn and sad and long in the face, and this is only going to get worse for him. But I feel like it didn't have the effect that they were hoping. I don't know. That's just.
I mean, it wasn't a triumph, but at the same time, it was a rite of passage. So that's why I give it.
Right.
And it's also this episode. Who do you have at number one?
Right, but he's also on the phone with his mom saying, like, please come back. You know, like, it's still, like, that's what is pressing on his mind. I got Diana at number one. Because the thing is, the car crash happens to her. She didn't happen to it. Like, to the end, she's true to herself in terms of controlling her narrative. And like, aside from Dodie saying, let's go here instead of there, she's like, I need to be on the phone with my kids. I don't want to talk to Muhammad. She barely gives Muhammad the time of day and is pretty much telling Dodie, like, this was fun, but it's not happening, man. Like,
she's here for a good time, not a long time.
I want to date a surgeon instead. I want to go back to Hasnat Khan. Can we have added that scene in?
Yeah, Hasnat sitting at home with, like, clutching his, something's happened.
Yeah, he feels a disturbance in the force. But it just feels wrong to put Diana going down because, like...
Yeah, I had that thought, too.
It wasn't meant to happen to her. It's totally wrong, and it's unfortunate, and it's just the worst, truly.
If she wasn't getting put upon this whole episode, I would consider putting her on the episode. But the way that she is... The world is just pummeling her into submission. I feel like, and that was one thing that I remember when the car accident happened, was the sense of like the world was so hard for her and her life was so difficult that it seemed inevitable, like that it was just going to crumble upon her. And I think as a young person, I remember that being like, oh, wow. And as an adult, it's still pretty powerful. So,
yeah. I was just looking to see if Diana could have potentially bought a copy of Deer Hunter for PlayStation for them, but it came out for Windows.
Big Buck Hunter?
Yeah, the video game. It did come out in 97, the first one, but not on PlayStation, unfortunately.
They had to go to the local pub to play it.
To play it, yeah. But that would have been a great bow on everything. Like, well, we got you some Deer Hunter, Willie. Play it at home. The interactive hunting experience. Well, that's this week on...
I feel like this is the finale, but now we have to deal with two-thirds of the season. Or three-quarters of the season.
Like, I mean, it did feel like a nice reprieve to not have the queen all up in this episode. It was like, you know what? She's been kind of a drag for the past season.
Something tells me she's really going to turn it around in the next week or two.
We'll see. Well, I am curious because this is going to be a rewrite of
the Queen.
The Queen. Yeah. I mean, he's getting a second shot at doing the same events that happened. So, really curious to see how he tackles it. But we teased at the beginning of this episode, there was some new royalty that was anointed in WWE.
Yeah. WrestleMania happened.
the story's over. Cody Rhodes is our new WWE champion.
Yeah, and I feel like this, I mean, we've said it, I think we briefly touched upon it last week, but in the week that followed, my mom texted me, or I was talking to my mom on the phone, and she was like, I heard there's a wrestling thing this weekend. I heard that it's got The Rock on it. And I was like, yes. And then my girlfriend's mom said, I heard The Rock is coming back to wrestling this weekend. So I think this was a pretty mainstream WrestleMania for all of our fans that might be like, oh God, they're talking about wrestling. No, we're talking about the biggest movie star in the world, Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah. And we watched the first night of it because it was a two-night event on Saturday. And I was saying to you in the moment, the way The Rock has approached this is as if it is a movie premiere. Like, he's literally give it the same kind of, like, attention and, like, promotion on his social media and everywhere to, like, be like, this is the event, you know, of the month.
Yeah, he did his skincare press junket and then did a WrestleMania press junket.
Yeah, and you bought some of the skincare.
Two different laps. Yep, I'm shining.
The Papatui. It's really popping. But yeah, Dave, did it live up to your expectations, though? Did it live up to the hype, you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's such a difficult thing to ace 2 3.5-hour shows back-to-back. Mm-hmm. And I think they did a great job with most of it.
Yeah. There's, like, we talked about it last week briefly, but there's an air of predictability to, like, how they set up these stories now where you have to have this ending on it or else it's mm-hmm. people are just not going to be as satisfied. And with that predictability, there was, like, multiple title changes, more than you usually see at one of these events, because it's just like, well, we got to wrap up that story appropriately. Mm-hmm. What most popped you, Dave? What got you most excited?
I mean, I think the answer would be all of the tomfoolery in the main event of Sunday.
Yeah.
The interferences and all that stuff. But I will say the craziest thing was Saturday night, Gunther, the longest reigning Intercontinental champion of all time, which is basically the
666 days.
666 days, a very prophetic number for him. Who no one really expected him to lose because he's going into a hometown show in Germany in a couple of weeks. And the story they told was thrown together with him and this Canadian Sami Zayn, who's kind of the ultimate underdog. And, you know, you have that sort of, you talk about making things predictable. They also, like, if the end is predictable, we need to make the middle unpredictable on a show like this. So the idea that this sort of, you know, not past his prime, but past his moment, underdog character could dethrone this guy who's had this championship for basically like 2 years, you know, was exciting. And we were, I think there's a, you know, we all gasped when he won. So that, and as well as all the interferences and tomfoolery of day two. What about you?
You know, well, it's those moments where people get their due, and that was one you just touched on, but like R-Truth becoming a tag champion, having a WrestleMania moment is like awesome considering he's been there for 20 years. But actually, I was surprised by the Bayley and Io match, because the thing is, we knew Bayley had to win. They've been teasing out her getting harassed for months by her former tag mates and stuff. And so you know she had to win, but you know it's a good match when you have the crowd chanting your name at the end to, like, get it done. Like, you whip them up into enough of a fervor, like, come on, get it done. And that's where they were at, and that was itself, I think, worked. Although, the only small nitpick would be that she should just finish her with that one finisher when everyone's chanting her name, rather than to do two more finishers after they had
been chanting her name. It's like, you gotta seal the deal.
yeah. Because, yeah, Cody had to do three finishers to Roman to finish it. But of the interferences and tomfoolery, because people don't know what you mean when you say tomfoolery, there's multiple run-ins from the Bloodline family. So Jimmy Uso, Solo Sikoa, The Rock,
all these Samoans,
and then on the other side you got Cena, you got Jey Uso, you got Seth Rollins, The Undertaker.
I'm forgetting
someone else.
No, you're not.
What was the best? What was the best pop, Dave?
I mean, this is where we're getting into Fellows territory. When Seth Rollins came out to the Shield music, came out, and then we replicated. So we're getting real wrestling nerdy with you. 10 years ago, or not 10 years, you know, like 8 or 9 years ago, the Shield, mm-hmm. a stable that had Roman Reigns, the former champion who was defeated on Sunday, with Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins broke that group up with a pretty epic cinematography-wise shot of him mm-hmm. hitting Roman Reigns with a chair. They duplicated that frame almost to like a T, where Roman Reigns had this chair and Seth Rollins comes out dressed in the tactical gear that the Shield would wear to the Shield's music,
back in the day.
Runs out to the ring. That was the group that they were in. And we see Roman Reigns has the chance to whoop Cody Rhodes' behind even more, or turn and whoop Seth Rollins the way that he got whooped by him years ago. That was a moment where I was like, oh, wow. This is some real galaxy braining wrestling right here to do this in this moment.
And that being his downfall as to why he lost the match is just perfectly poetic for Roman. Mm-hmm. My favorite pop of that is much more simple, though. It's when Cena was in the ring with The Rock, and The Rock just does a smackdown on Cena, and he says, "Get the F out of my ring." I was so hot for that moment, because you know they don't like each other
more than a lot of people have swore.
Absolutely. And the thing is, there's just the fact that there's a twinge of like actual like animosity between the two of them, as much as they've buried the hatchet, you know The Rock,
it's easy
in some
to
ways
tap
doesn't.
Into in the fiction.
Oh, absolutely. And so he meant it, I think, when he said, "Get the F out of my ring." And I love that.
And then like, the Undertaker said, no, this is my ring. WrestleMania is my house. Oh,
fantastic. And people wanted Stone Cold to show up in that spot, and I was still waiting for Stone Cold to show up. But Taker, I think, actually made more sense. He fought Roman, befelled him in WrestleMania. It just made more sense for him to be there.
Mm-hmm. And WrestleMania is his show. He's the true stalwart of WrestleMania. 23 matches of the past 40, over half.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then Cody Rhodes won.
I mean, if people have the time, watch those matches with Cody Rhodes and Roman and The Rock over the weekend. They're definitely worth your time, both of them.
Oh, and Drew McIntyre, to take it to the period dramas in the UK. Incredible performance from him, too. Really cranking up the bad guy energy. So
Scottish would be proud of him. For the win he got, except for the loss that immediately followed that, but
that's neither here nor there.
And Dave, last thing though, we didn't just watch WrestleMania over the weekend. We went to concerts too. You went to see Primus.
Yep, I went to see Primus, A Perfect Circle, and Pussifer. If you like alternative '90s and early 2000s metal bands,
how was that?
It was great. It was a bizarre show that was weirdly paced, but it was like a really fun night. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Primus is one of my favorite bands. So I was just like, it's always cool to see your favorites. Like, you have that moment where you got to pinch yourself and be like, I'm here. Because I feel like my brain, I'm always like, when I'm at the show, I have a tough time being in the moment. Like, there's a UConn game on that Maynard Keenan, the lead singer, says, I don't want to see anyone with their cell phones out. And I'm just starting to think, like, what if UConn's getting blown out? And I'm thinking, like, I got a busy day. WrestleMania's tomorrow. Is The Rock going to win? And I'm having all these thoughts. And I'm like, no. Like, just try really hard to be here. And then when you like, one of your favorites comes out, it's just like, whew, I'm here, baby. Like, I put it in my veins.
So good. Oh, yeah. It just hits you. Like, we're here in the moment.
And then you saw... someone a little younger than a bunch of 60-year-old men playing avant-garde metal.
I saw Olivia Rodrigo at MSG, you know. I'm not going to proclaim myself as the number one fan, but to the point that you're making, though, like, when she's singing Good For You and everyone is singing along full-throated, including yourself, it's like, holy shit, we're here in the moment singing the song with her. And it just rocked so hard. Big fan of her, like, heavier rocking songs and the ballads. She has the young crowd hanging on every single word that she sings. It's pretty crazy to see. There was a moment where she turned off the lights and stopped all the audio and told the crowd to shout as loud as they could. And considering most of the crowd was teenagers, my ears were like just shaking for the next day. It was pretty intense. But great show. She's definitely grown in confidence in terms of her performing. And highly recommend it. So there you go. If you have Perfect Circle or Primus coming to town or Olivia Rodrigo, you're not going to miss
them
if
all.
You see them. Yeah. The Rock comes to town, go see him.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Cody Rhodes, go see him. Everything's great. Everything's beautiful except on the crown. So we'll follow up with the crown next week on the podcast. Until then, you know where to find us. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, X. Hit us up at lordsgrantham@gmail.com. Leave us a 5-star rating or review if you so choose at Spotify or iTunes, wherever you get us. You can find our whole catalog on our Podbean website. Sign up for our Patreon. We're going to have bonus content there. But until
we
then,
just,
we'll find
we just
you.
Re... I know this is your plug, and we're running long here. But I just totally revamped our Patreon approach, and we already immediately got someone upgrade from one tier to the next. That they... It was such a, like, oh, wow, they actually do a lot of stuff. So if you have... Go on our Patreon page and look at what's on it, and you can see the number of bonus episodes and content on there. So
yeah,
that's just my 2 cents.
There you go. Look into it. But until then, we'll catch you next time on the pod.